Psalm 4 begins this way. It says, "Answer me when I call, O God of my righteousness. You have given me relief when I was in distress. Be gracious to me and hear my prayer." Psalm 4 is a man named David. Maybe you've heard of him. He's the king of God's people in Israel. Now, David, it appears in this psalm, is laying his head down to go to bed at night. All right, so just picture David. He's going to bed, and I think maybe not much has changed, because it would appear as if even thousands of years ago, he lays down to go to bed, and immediately some thoughts, some worries, some anxiety, some frustrations just begin to fill him. You ever had a night like that? A night where you kind of just lay your head down. It's quiet and it's dark for maybe the first time, and all of a sudden, you just get anxiety and worry that floods you. You know, it's funny to me that when we're kids, a lot of us were probably scared of the dark, right? Like when you go to bed at night, you're just kind of freaked out. It's creepy. But I wonder how much different we actually are now as adults. You know, I'm hoping that probably none of you are scared of the boogeyman under your bed or anything, but still, like, think about at nighttime when it's dark, it just kind of closes in on you. Maybe for the first time all day, you actually just have silence. And just think about maybe how it might be scary to let your mind just begin to race. You know, we start to play in our mind the conversation that we had with our boss earlier that day that just did not seem to go well, right? You start to play in your head the step after step of wrong turns that relationship took that ended up causing it to break. You start to add up the bills that have continued to come in, yet the income hasn't seemed to match up. You think about how it's been 3 years since college, and now you realize you don't know what to do, and you don't know how to use your degree. And we start to get this sense of fear, or of anxiety, or of distress. You know, I think all of us have probably had those nights, right? We've had those moments where anxiety just begins to fill us. And so, in kind of preparation for this, I wanted to kind of figure out, okay, I think anxiety is pervasive. We've all experienced it to some extent, but I wanted to kind of get a sense of, what's the leading causes of anxiety? Like, what are some of the things that really cause us to be anxious? And so, as any good researcher or scholar, I immediately went to Google to just search, I feel anxious when, and I didn't know what I was really looking for. I just wanted to kind of get a sense for, okay, what are people feeling anxious about? And what I found was really interesting. You know, like when you put into Google, you start a sentence and then the drop-down menu comes and it's the top 8 to 10 things that people search most often. And I typed in, I feel anxious when, and it struck me the things that people search for. Let me just give you a few. The first one was, I feel anxious when someone likes me. All right? Some of you have probably been there. Okay? So someone likes you, I feel anxious. But like 3 below that was, I feel anxious when I'm all alone. Okay, now a couple down from that, one said, I feel anxious when I have nothing to do. And literally the one right below that said, I feel anxious when I'm overwhelmed. And then the last two were literally, this is like kind of funny but really sad. One said, I feel anxious every morning. And one said, I feel anxious when I go to bed. And what struck me was how pervasive anxiety really is. You can see here, people are saying, look, I feel anxious when I have a relationship starting. And I feel anxious when I have no relationship. Right? I feel anxious when I'm bored and I have nothing to do, but then when I have stuff to do, I feel anxious still, right? I feel anxious when I wake up in the morning and I feel anxious when I go to bed at night. What struck me is that anxiety, this kind of distress in your soul, is common to everyone. We've all faced this anxiety. And so this morning, I want you to consider, if you think about the last time you've been anxious, maybe you walked in the doors this morning and you just feel anxious, you just feel uneasy. What is it that your soul longs for in those moments? What do you long for when you're anxious? I mean, I think at the ultimate level, we long for peace, right? That's the opposite of anxiety. When your soul feels distressed and uneasy, you want comfort, you want relief, you want peace in your life. And I think that's good, right? The turmoil in your soul is a good sign, and what you want is this harmony, this peace. But the question that I think Psalm 4 is going to help us answer is, how do we move from anxiety to peace? When we're in those moments, maybe late at night, maybe at your cubicle, maybe at the coffee shop, when you're just getting overwhelmed with anxiety, how do we move from there to peace? How do we get from conflict to comfort? Because I think most of us, if we're honest, if I asked you, how do you move from anxiety to peace, most of us would immediately think, well, I would just need my circumstances to be a little different. If this relationship didn't go this way, then I would have peace. If I just had a little bit more money, then I would have peace. If I just got that one more promotion, then I would have peace. We think if our circumstances change a little bit, then I would have comfort. But I think this morning we're going to look in Psalm 4, and I think God wants to reveal that more than in those moments you need a circumstance change, we need a heart change. The more that God wants to just change your external circumstances, he really wants to change you. And I would propose this morning that real, lasting peace and comfort doesn't come from your circumstances altering a little bit, but it comes from inside. All right, we're going to watch how David, the author of our psalm, processes through this. So if you haven't got there yet, go in your Bible to Psalm 4. And I'm going to break this up kind of in four sections. All right, we're going to watch David's soul kind of go through this prayer. And he's going to move through four things. In verse 2, we're going to find the conflict of the distressed. All right, the conflict of the distressed. In verses 3 through 5, we'll see the call of the distressed, the call to action, what we're supposed to do. Verses 6 and 7, we're going to see him switch into contentment. We're going to see the distressed find contentment. And then verse 8, we're finally going to end with comfort. All right, we're going to watch David's soul move from the conflict to a call to action to finding contentment, which will lead to comfort. So let's go. Psalm 4, verse 2. Let's look at the conflict in David's life. He says, "O men, how long shall my honor be turned into shame? How long will you love vain words and seek after lies?" So this is King David, right? But remember, at this point, David, he's not ruling and reigning in Jerusalem. So when you have David in your mind thousands of years ago at this time, don't picture him in this lush palace where he's just living it up and he's on his, you know, massive California king bed. He's just enjoying life, right? That's not him right now. David's actually on the run at this point. You know, his own son wants to kill him. His son wants the throne, and basically most of his nation is siding with his son. And so David gets run out of town. David is actually probably hiding in a cave somewhere, sleeping on a rock and penning these words. The problem that we see for David comes in the latter phrase in verse 2. He says, "How long will you love vain words and seek after lies?" So he's saying that the distress in his life, the anxiety that's built up inside of him, is from people loving vain words and seeking after that which isn't true. It's people seeking after lies. For David, the anxiety and the pain comes from these lies that are building. You know, I thought about this week. I think it's probably fair to say that at the root of most of our anxiety and most of our distress comes from seeking after vain words and believing in lies. Now, I say the root of most of our anxiety comes from this seeking after lies. Now, I say most because the reality is there are circumstances in life that are just hard. Like, it just really is reality. Like, when the bank account hits zero, it hits zero. Like, that's not a lie. That's just reality, and that's hard. When you get an F on a test, you fail. Like, there's nothing to do. You just fail. That's reality. But I think for many of us, more often than not, these causes of distress and anxiety really do come from believing and not reality, not having our eyes focused on what God says, but believing lies, having our eyes only focused on our circumstances. Now, I think this can happen in two different ways, really. I think one is kind of like for David, this can happen kind of externally. right? So David's problem was that people around him, the people closest to him, were really believing in lies. In Psalm 3, these people are telling of David, they're saying, look, there's no salvation for you in God. God has left you. He's abandoned you. He does not care about you. The lies that people are believing, they're not focused on what God is saying. They're just drumming up these lies, and they're saying, look, David, God's left you. And if God's left you, then we're leaving you. And because of this, there's this anxiety and distress in his life. But I also think that for most of us, more of our anxiety stems not from external people believing in lies, but internal. Right? A lot of the times that our anxiety grows the fastest is when our own soul begins to lift our eyes off of God and begins to focus on false realities and lies. So let me prove this to you. Think about, get in your mind, the last time, maybe this morning, that you feel anxious. The last thing that was going on in life where you just had this unease in your soul. You just felt anxious. Now, I would bet for most of us, one of the root causes of that anxiety growing and causing such an unease is not because we're focused on what God says and on the truth of reality, but because we've begun to spiral into lies. So think about, with whatever that situation is, just think if these phrases might sound familiar. Maybe you've said something like, you know, I am just simply not good enough, and that's why I'm failing. You know, I'm just simply not attractive enough, and that's why I am still single. You know, I deserve more respect than what people are giving me, and that's why I'm struggling at my workplace. You know, I cannot possibly have enough time to get all of this completed, and so my boss's expectations are just too great for me. You know, there's no way that I could make enough money to ever make these ends meet. God is just not going to provide for me. I think it's phrases like these that just get lodged into our hearts and into our minds, and we begin to spiral. Now, none of those things are what God says about us. And most often, none of those things are the actual reason that you have a problem in your life, but we begin to believe these lies, and we begin to play these games. Have you ever done the worst-case scenario game where you just begin to spiral? So I did this a couple weeks ago. My wife and I, we just bought a new house in the beginning of June. And so we moved into the new house, and it was, you know, great for a little bit. We were sad to leave the old one, but we were happy, you know, because we have this new house now. And about 2 weeks in, man, I just got filled with anxiety. And it was crazy. Like, it started off by just saying, man, this house just doesn't feel like home. You know, I don't know if this was the right decision. But then that kind of led to, well, you know, it was really, you know, we were kind of on the fence, and I'm the one that really pushed for getting this house. And so, you know, how is Bailey ever going to trust me again? Like, I'm leading us into this bad decision. You know, if I'm not a good leader, you know, we've got this church plant, man. What if the church fails? You know, the mortgage is like going up now, and I've got a son who's 8 months now. And if the church fails, I'm going to lose my job. And now if I don't have a job, I'm not going to have any money. I'm like, my church is going to probably leave me. My wife is probably going to leave me. Like, I literally just in a matter of like 20 minutes spiraled from, I don't know if this house feels like home, to I am a complete loser who has no hope in the future. Right? Like, you ever do that where you just begin to play these games? Now, reality, none of that was really true. But like, all of that was just the worst case scenario compounding upon itself. And what it did was just build this anxiety deep in my soul. And so I think for us, before we can ever move from anxiety to peace, from the conflict that we're facing to comfort, we have to recognize first that at the root level, most of our anxiety is not focused on what God is saying about the situation, but lies and worst-case scenario games that we've been playing. Now, if we realize that, if we see that, if like David, we're saying that we cannot seek after lies, then what's the next step? What's the call? Let's ask the conflict. What's the call for the distress? Well, look at verses 3 through 5. David writes this. He says, "But know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord. I think the way that we combat the lies that we hear is by letting our entire self be shaped by truth. So the ways that we can combat the lies that we're believing in and that's causing more anxiety, the ways that we combat that is actually letting our entire self be shaped by truth. Now, I say entire self very carefully, right? Because I don't know if you noticed, but David goes through this progression in verses 3, 4, and 5. And I think what he does is he talks about our head, and then he gets into our hearts, and then he moves towards our hands. So just watch how he does this through these three verses. The first part he says is, man, truth has to shape our mind. Look at verse 3. He says, but know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. So remember, David's circumstance is that everyone has just said, God has abandoned you. God's not with you. God's not coming back for you. You are gone. God does not care anymore. Now, again, in this circumstance, would you not be tempted? You're sitting in a cave. Would you not be tempted to think, they might be right, right? Like your circumstances is apparently this might be true. You know, David was promised this kingdom, this everlasting kingdom. His son was going to carry on his line and rule and reign forever. Yet David is now cowering in a cave and his son wants him dead. Think about that. God promised one thing, yet his circumstances in life show a completely different scenario. And don't think of David as this superhero. He's just a man and he's probably thinking, that might be true. So what does David do? He reminds himself of what God says. He says, know that the Lord has set apart for himself the godly. He's saying, look, I know that God has not left me because God has promised to set apart for himself the godly. If I remain with God, then God has not abandoned me. He has not left me. Just imagine when you are in those moments of anxiety, how hard is it to remember and believe in the truth of God when your circumstances seem to be pointing another direction? I think it's one of the toughest things to do when you're anxious and overwhelmed is the last thing you want to hear is probably like Bible verses, right? Like when you're anxious, when you're feeling alone, it's not always the most comforting to have someone come up and say, hey, but Jesus is with you, so it's okay, right? Like if you feel like you don't know who you are and your identity is lost and someone comes up and says, hey, your identity is secure in Christ. I mean, it's true, but it's hard, right? Because what we do is our eyes are fixed on our circumstances. And it so shapes our heart and mind that we completely begin to block out truth. But you have to hear me. In those moments, the neglecting of truth will not bring about comfort and conflict. It won't. You blocking out what God says and you blocking out the truths of Scripture will never bring comfort in conflict. The only way to fight lies that are filling your heart and mind is to fill them with truth. David says, first, we have to know truth. But I love this. He moves on and he says, look, it's not just about your head. It also has to get down to your heart. Look at verse 4. He says, be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your bed and be silent. So he's saying, look, it's not going to be good enough for you just to hear truth. At some point, that has to shift down, and you've got to believe this. But I got to tell you, one of the things I love about David is he says, hey, be angry. Like, get angry. If this is where, if your circumstances are not what God has promised, if evil has kind of crept into your heart or other people are believing that about you, he says, look, be angry. That's not right. But he says, and be silent. Ponder in your heart and on your beds. I think what he's saying is, look, be angry, but stay holy. Like, be angry, but don't wander into sin. You need to control that anger. Let that frustration come, but but keep it with you. Don't let it cause you to further sin or further compound the problem and the anxiety with more sin. You know, I think for most of us, we would say if something like this happens, your quickest, your first response in anger is hardly ever righteous, right? I mean, most of the time it's defensive. Most of the time it's vengeful. Most of the time our first response in anger is usually sinful. And I love that David says, hey, you can be angry, but stay controlled. Don't let the anger cause you to go and sin, but let it sit. Ponder the truth in your head. Be angry about how it's not matching up. And eventually, as you ponder that, I think he says it's going to get down into your heart. So be angry, but stay controlled. And then lastly, he moves on and says that the truth has to shape our hands. And when I say hands, I just mean our lifestyle, how we walk in life. He says, offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord. So I think he's saying, once you know the truth, and that has begun to, you've meditated on it, and that's begun to kind of shift into your heart. He says, in the meantime, while that process is taking place, because if you've done this, you know the moving from the head to the heart takes some time sometimes. That's not going to just happen instantly. That's going to take some time. And he says, while that's happening, continue to stay close to God. Continue to put your trust in him. Because again, I think if we're honest, when you feel most anxious, when you feel like God has abandoned you or let you down, is it not even more easy to just run to sin to kind of cope? Right? Like in those moments, I think we begin to gossip a little bit more. Right? We begin to maybe run to substances a little bit more. We begin to pull away from community a little bit more. We begin to deflect things a little bit more. We begin to isolate ourselves a little bit more. When we feel anxious and upset and distressed, well, we oftentimes will run away from the things God says and run to something of the world to kind of cope or deal with that. And I think David's saying, hey, as you're meditating on truth and while you're working to believe that, keep close to God. Don't run. Don't wander off. Don't begin to put your trust in something of the world to give you comfort. Stay close to God. I think he's saying we need to shape our head with truth. We need to start believing truth. And while that's happening, we need to continue to walk in truth. So Benson, when you feel anxious, when you feel worried, I think God, through David here, wants to call you to action to first preach that truth to yourself, right? And if you would say, hey, man, I don't know my Bible. I don't even know what truth I would tell myself. Then I'll be honest with you. What I would really encourage you is find somebody who does and give them permission to tell you in those moments, right? I know it's going to be hard to hear sometimes, but neglecting truth will never bring comfort in conflict. So if you feel like, I don't know my Bible, I don't know the truth, and I would really encourage, get around somebody who does and say, hey, when I'm feeling this way, could you tell me what God says about this? We do this in community. We need to know truth. And while you do that, meditate on it. Say it over and over and over again. Every morning, every time you sit down and have a moment, just meditate on that truth until your heart begins to get there. And while you do that, stay in community. Stay listening to God. Continue on walking in holiness. And I think through this, David's going to say, you will start to see a change. What we're going to start to move from is this call to action in conflict to actually finding some contentment. Look at verse 6 and 7. We're going to move to see the contentment of the distressed. He says this, now there are many who say, who will show us some good? Lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord. You have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and wine abound. Do you notice the subtle shift that's beginning to happen in David's voice? He's beginning to move from just this conflict and this anxiety that has filled him to now he's starting to shift and he's starting to rest in God. Now, verse 6, if you look at it, it's a little bit confusing, and most commentaries and scholars, they kind of debate where we should put the quotation marks. It's a little bit odd to figure, okay, who's saying what here? Now, because 99% of you don't care, I'm just going to give you what I found to probably be most true, and you'll just go with that. So here's what I think is probably being said here. I think David is saying, look, there are many who say, who will show us some good? Quotation. So I think he's saying, look, these people that are believing in lies, what they're doing is they're wandering around on the earth and they're saying, man, where are we going to find the good? Where are we going to find prosperity? Where are we going to find satisfaction? Where are we going to find more joy? He's saying, look, these people have said, man, God's not going to help you. God's not going to help us. So where are we going to go to find prosperity? Where are we going to go to find contentment and satisfaction? So what's David's response? I think he's saying this. Lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord, for you have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and wine abound. So here's what I think David's saying. I think he's saying, look, the people that love lies, that are seeking after this stuff, they're always going to seek the things of the world to satisfy them. They're always going to try to find things in the world to satisfy them. So David says, God, we need you. Give us the light of your face. Put joy in my heart. Because he says the presence of God gives more joy, more satisfaction, more contentment than when grain and wine abound. Now, grain and wine is symbolic of kind of economic wealth and prosperity, as well as just physical joy and happiness with wine. So when grain and wine abound, what that's saying is, look, times are good, right? In an agricultural society, when grain is abounding, things are going well. That means the economy's up. You've got lots of money. When wine is flowing, that means you're happy and joyful. And so what he's saying is, look, even when the things of this world give you everything they've got, even when they give you the best things they have to offer, David is saying, look, your presence is still better. It is still better. It is still more joyful. There is still more contentment in you than even if I had everything of the world. Now, I don't want you to hear this as just kind of a Bible-y Sunday school type answer. All right? And I know it can sound like that. Like, okay, just forsake some of these other things of the world because God will give you more satisfaction. But I think most of us would actually, if we really pressed ourselves, we would know this is true. So let me just run this through to kind of show you. So my wife and I, we just had a boy about 8 months ago. And I remember the first few months when he was a baby. So, you know, his first couple months. And it's awesome. It's great. He's yours. Like, it's amazing. But I will say, it at times is a little bit boring. Like, he literally just sits there. Like, there's really, he does nothing. Most of the time he's sleeping. And so it's kind of nice. But what you start to think in your mind is, man, once he kind of gets a little bit older, when he gets to be a toddler and he kind of runs around a little bit, then we'll be talking. Like, then it's going to be fun to have a kid, right? And so you're kind of looking forward and thinking, this is nice, but that's going to be better. Right, but then, you know, think about it. Now, as you're a toddler, right? So he's, you know, 3, 4 stuff. You know, kids, they think that school at that age is going to be awesome, right? It's going to be fun. You get to go meet different people, all this stuff. And so most kids are like, man, I just want to get to school. That's going to be great. And then, you know, you go through elementary school a little bit, and you're kind of like, okay, this isn't that great. But, man, high school is going to be sweet, right? Like, do you ever think that as, like, a middle school? You're like, man, those high school. Like, once I get to high school, that's going to be amazing. And so you get to high school, maybe the first year or two are great, or maybe you get made fun of or picked on or whatever, and all of a sudden you're a junior, senior, and you're thinking, okay, high school's lame, right? I don't like high school, but dude, college is going to be so fun. Like, I'm going to reinvent myself, and I'm going to be a whole new me, and I'm going to be doing what I love. And so once I get to college, then it's going to be all better. And so you get to college, but then after a couple years, you start to realize, okay, I'm sick of school. Like, I don't want to go to college anymore. And so once I get this job, like, once I get my first job, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to have my job. This is going to be great. And so you graduate and you get that job. And then a year later, you kind of feel like, well, I'm a little bit lonely, right? And so really, this job's nice, but really what would, like, fill a craving is just, if I could get a spouse. And so you get married, right? And you get married and you think, this is amazing. And then you realize that it's very hard and it's not maybe everything that you thought it was going to be. And so then you start thinking, okay, well, what we need is we need a house, right? We're mid-20s now. We need to go get a house. We need to own something. And so you go out and you buy this house, and it's a great 3-bedroom house. It's amazing, and you love it. But then you start to think, okay, well, now we've got the house. We better, like, fill it with kids. And so you think, man, this is, you know, big house. We need kids. And so you have your kids, and that's amazing, and kids are awesome. But then you start to have more kids, and you've got 5 kids, and all of a sudden you're thinking, this house is no good. Like, this is way too small. And so what I need is I need that forever home, right? And so I'm going to go out, and I'm going to buy this forever home. And then we get into that home, but you realize the mortgage payment for that is quite a bit higher. And so you think, man, this home's only good if I get that promotion, right? Like, I still need that bigger promotion. There's 2 more rungs on the ladder that I got to climb. And so you set your sights on that. And then you get those promotions, and you realize, man, I just got to get my kids to college. Like, I'm done with them in the house. I need them gone. And once I have this promotion, it's just going to be my spouse and I, and the kids will be gone. This will be amazing. And so you look forward to that. And then they leave, and all of a sudden you're thinking, ooh, I just need retirement. Like, once I just can retire, well, me and my spouse, it's going to be amazing. Well, just that's going to be when we finally have made it. And then you retire, and you're sitting on your patio, and you realize, man, death sounds pretty good. Right? It's like, oh, death is going to be good, right? And you've made it your entire life. You've made it to this point. Sorry if anybody's retired, doesn't think that. But reality, when your bones are hurting and you're not the same way that you were before, a new body sounds pretty nice, I'm sure. So look, but here's the reality. You know that every step that most of you have probably lived at, you're right in the middle of that. And what we've convinced ourselves is that my soul will finally be content when I get that next thing. Just a little more grain, just a little bit more wine, just a little bit more, and I will finally be satisfied. And David is just saying what we just looked at, which is there is more joy, more satisfaction, more contentment just being in the presence of God than chasing something until the point of death. David wants us to know that there is great satisfaction and contentment in God. You know, I mean, it's why that we get to college and realize it's an overhyped high school. It's why you get the dream job and feel like there's still more levels. It's why you live out the American dream and feel like the nights can still be lonely and you're still filled with anxiety. It's because those things were not meant to satisfy your soul. And if we live for those things, we will never find genuine contentment. I don't think contentment comes when your circumstances change. It comes when God comes into the distress with you. The greatest thing you need in those moments is not for the next thing or for your circumstances to be different. You need God. You need the presence of God in those moments to set your soul on Him. And that, I think if we can move there, if we can get our hearts to believe that, that is the thing that will finally get us to comfort. Look at verse 8. He says, "In peace, I will both lie down and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety." Notice there, from verses 1 to 8, circumstances never changed. He's still on a rock. He's still in a cave. His family has still traded him away for nothing. He's still on the run. Yet he moves from this conflict to comfort because he has found his joy and satisfaction in the Lord. Comfort in conflict will not come from circumstances changing, but it will come from your heart moving from desiring that to simply desiring God. David here in this psalm has his soul moved to a place where he believes God will be with him. God will not leave him. God will keep him. And you know, the benefit that we have over David is that for David, he's just banking on these promises of God. God has told him that, and so he just says, I will just trust you. But did you know that we don't even have to do that? God has even made it easier for us because what David was looking for was something that we now know. You know, for David, he had this paradox in his mind of knowing, look, he has wandered from God. He has struggled in sin. He knew his sin separates him from God, but he believed somehow God would still be with him. Yet for us, we don't have to just look forward or just hope that this ethereal God in the sky will be with us. But 2,000 years ago, we actually got to see him prove this to us in the sending of his son. You know, when he sent Jesus, he sent his son because our sin and our rebellion from God has caused us to not deserve God, has caused us to not deserve God to be present with us. But when Jesus went to the cross, when he faced the lies of the people around him, when he cried out on the cross, God, why have you left me? Why have you left me in my conflict? You know who didn't answer? God. God had, in effect, abandoned his own son on the cross because all those who would later place their faith in him would now never have to be abandoned. You know, the separation that you and I deserve from God was experienced by Jesus on the cross. As he's crying out in distress, there was no comfort for him. When he was in his greatest amount of turmoil, there was no Savior swooping in to save him from it. God let him face it so that if your faith is in Jesus, you'll never have to. What David was hoping for was a way that God would be present with him. And what we know is that Jesus said, if you trust in me, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. The presence of God is now actually inside of you. The presence that David longed for, that said there's more satisfaction, is actually available to you in the form of the Spirit of God living inside of you. We don't have to go chasing contentment through the things of this world, chasing lies down, because Jesus has offered the presence of God to you. And so this morning, what I want to do, Tyler's going to come up in a moment and lead us into a time of communion. But before he does that, I want to just take maybe 10 or 15 seconds. And if the Spirit is doing anything in your hearts and your minds, if you feel like there is something that has just plagued you with anxiety, there's been something that's just been uneasy in your soul, would you just kind of be willing to almost kind of take that out? Maybe it's something you've buried. Maybe it's something you just carry for weeks or months or years. And would you just actually just kind of lay that before God? Would you just tell God that this is where your soul is anxious? And after about 15 seconds or so of just kind of thinking on that, Tyler's going to come up and he's going to lead us into communion. What I want you to do is if you're a believer in Jesus and you come forward to take communion, as you take that, would that be a reminder of the grace and the comfort that Jesus offers you? That in his broken body and shed blood, his sacrifice for you, you can know that all that anxiety can be laid on Jesus. And Philippians says, you can have a peace that transcends understanding. That it doesn't even make sense that you could have that type of peace, but that's what comes with the presence of God. So would you just take maybe 10, 15 seconds, ponder what that is in your mind, and then Tyler will come up and lead us into communion.